What's going on, everybody? Mike Myers here with the VidBiz Podcast. Today is episode 17, and I'm really excited for our guest today, Henry Rapp. Henry discusses what he's a sound engineer, sound recordist, does a lot of stuff for a lot of different things when it comes to audio recording. He's very, very good at what he does, and I'm really excited to have him on the show. So, without further ado, let's get into it. Hey everybody, welcome back to the VidBiz Podcast. Today we have a very special guest, Henry Rapp. Henry is a production sound mixer and location sound recordist for TV, film, and commercial video production. He's based in Cleveland, Ohio, just up the road from me, and he's also available for travel shoots as well. He says his belief about his job as a sound recordist is all about capturing performances, whether that's documentary interviews, comedians on a stage, a musical performance, or actors in a narrative film. It's all about capturing those moments. So Henry, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
I know that, like, in your bio, you also kind of mention you haven't always been in video, in the video world as an audio person. Kind of just catch us up on your career, however long that's been up to this point, where you started and kind of where you are now, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I started in audio, not even necessarily professionally, when I was like a teenager and just wanted to record my friends' punk bands and whatnot, and quickly realized that was something I want to do as a career, and eventually started working out of a commercial studio a good friend of mine owns, and was producing music full time. And then around 2015, a good friend of mine who was neighbors of the studio at the time introduced me to another production sound mixer who was looking for a boom op at the time for a feature film. And that was sort of my first experience with production audio. I had previously never really considered that as even a option. It just wasn't something that I'd really thought about. And then he ended up hiring me for what ended up being a tier one union feature. So that was my first time on set, which is kind of a surreal experience, stepping onto such a large production for your first production. But after that, I ended up leaning into that area of audio, and that has since become my main thing.
I guess, how have you, like, in 2015 or whenever that feature film
came,
was it like, oh yeah, I'm going to do this, I'm just going to do, like, start my own business, I guess, doing this or freelancing? Or have you ever, like, worked for a studio or another production company,
like, so on the staff? I've never worked for a production company. I almost did for a minute. I interviewed, and fortunately, I'm actually glad that it did not work out, because that company shortly went out of business, so I would have been out of job anyways. I had already had a freelance background prior to ever getting into film, so it was sort of a natural transition, and I just started trying to lean into the freelance audio for video side of things, and it sort of became a natural... Not only was there a need for that, and it was something I was able to do, but it's something I naturally fell into.
Right. You say there's a need for that. So I find it very interesting, especially since the location that we live in we don't live in Hollywood or New York City or any of the, like, major, you know, production meccas. How did you find, I guess, in kind of like a niche that is audio for video? It seems like I from the outside looking in, people would be like, how is that even, how do you find enough work, almost, like, because of, like, but as I know as well, like, it's all there, but it just seems like, I feel like that would kind of be like, I guess, how did you figure out, like, there's a market for this, there's a need for what I'm doing, and I'm good at it, and I'm just gonna go all in?
Yeah, I mean, I saw that there were other people doing this to start, so I knew that there was enough work to support those people who are doing it full time, even in smaller markets. But really any sort of video production has a need for quality sound, and there's limits to what a one-man band can do in terms of production value. So any sort of shoot that has any budget behind it, or as they start adding crew to increase the production value, sound is usually one of the first roles hired after a director of photography.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's definitely where I'm, as I kind of have grown and brought on additional crew members and freelancers, it's like, okay, where can we, it's almost selfish at first of like, what are the things that I hate doing or that I know that I'm not good at, lighting and cam op and pretty much all of the things like audio, like, you know, you kind of realize like, oh, there are people that are way better at these things than I am. And then realize, you know, as clients, bigger clients come on and budgets increase, you're like, yeah, that definitely, like, having a dedicated audio person is like the most life-changing experience. And just kind of having like, you know, I've never been on like, you know, a feature where there's like, you know, 40, 50 plus people on the crew, but even just having 5 or 6 people, you know, is way different than having just yourself.
Absolutely.
Like, lugging all the gear and then like remembering to do all of the things of like, all right, I got the camera set up. Oh wait, now I have this, you know, I've got the frame set up and now I need to light it. Oh, now I need, you know, audio and all of those different things. So
yeah, absolutely. Just, yeah, even increases the ability to work at a quick pace.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It you know, just, it astounds me. Just kind of, you and I have worked together, you know, in 2022, and just the amount of, just on that one project, the amount of work that we got done, how quickly we got it done, kind of took me by surprise. But it was just because everyone was very focused, hyper focused on their specific thing and nothing else. And that's definitely a beautiful thing. So it doesn't really surprise me, but I was curious about that as far as like a smaller market like Cleveland. I mean, things are evolving.
Certainly, certainly. Sure. And I mean, every market has production. I mean, there's company headquarters everywhere. So there's commercial content being produced everywhere. There's documentary content being produced everywhere because there's different stories that require you to go to different locations. And that's not always in a major market. A lot of times it even isn't in a major market. And live television is still always being produced, which typically always hires audio. I mean, there's all these different types of content that aren't only produced in LA or New York or somewhere like that. So really it doesn't necessarily, like, there's certain types of work you may not have as much of in certain areas, but there's always going to be work.
Right. Yeah. And I think beautiful things like, Wear Spot.
Yeah, absolutely.
On Facebook, like that has opened my eyes and just like, of like, oh wow. Like, I mean, I found you through a mutual friend, for a job specifically. Like, I was like, I need an audio person, and you know, everyone floods back Henry and it's like, okay, well, I guess that's the guy. And it's great just having those, you know, those kind of resources. It's you know, in the age that we live, having just Facebook groups of like, I need this for this. And I'm assuming that sometimes that you get like production companies coming from outside into this area. Like you said, they're shooting on location for a documentary or whatever, and they're like, but we don't want to, you know, we don't want to fly and house like an audio person or, you know, a crew. So we're just going to hire locally.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure that has worked out well for sure. But yeah, I mean, I guess kind of in that vein of like just kind of being a part of a crew versus kind of like where I started in weddings, and weddings was like really like, I feel like every filmmaker should cut their teeth like making a few wedding videos, because you're literally in charge of everything and you only have one chance to do it. And so all of those different, like, all of those different aspects of production, obviously it's different. It's not like scripted. We're not doing multiple takes. So you're just kind of getting what you get, but you kind of cut your teeth in all of those different areas a little bit, like, okay, what's the most efficient, like, way to record audio, or, you know, to light the situation, or, you know, the whole thing. But I guess what is the biggest thing that you see, like, amateur filmmakers, or like just kind of like one man videographer guys, what's like the biggest point of failure in just the audio world, I guess,
yeah,
that you see and you're like, oh man, if they just fix this.
Yeah, I guess maybe. Within the, like, more one man band doing everything yourself kind of world, I think mic technique and choosing the right microphones for each scenario tends to be usually where weak points first exist. Obviously, if you're capturing dialogue, you need to get that microphone close to talent as close as possible. So having something like an on-camera mic 10 feet away from an interview subject is not going to give you good results. Inversely, though, like, leaning too heavily on something like a lav, certainly they're great problem solvers, but they're not going to give you the highest quality audio you can get. Something like a well-placed shotgun mic is going to sound significantly better than, obviously, a camera mic or even a lav. Lavs come with a lot of disadvantages. If they're wireless, there's always potential for interference. There's lower fidelity because it's not a hardwired connection. And then even within that, even if you have no problems with the wireless, there's just so much fidelity, only so much fidelity possible in a miniaturized capsule comparatively to a full-size mic.
Sure. So, like, I know that I'm trying to think of, like, all of the different, like, videos that I've seen over the years of where it's like, wow, that was a pretty decent video, but it was completely eclipsed by horrible sound. And I think of, like you said, mic placement. What, like, if, okay, say for, I know, okay, I say this from, like, experience of, like, I know a lot of filmmakers, like, one-man bands that are using those, like, kind of self-contained units where it's a lav that goes into a pack that records to an SD mm-hmm. card. A lot of people use those because they don't want to monitor audio, or they don't have the capability, or, like, enough ears to, like, I need to be doing this and this, I don't have time to wear headphones to monitor, so I'm just gonna, like, cross my fingers. So if that was the case with, like, you were talking to somebody that just had those in their arsenal of you know, the standard lav mic that comes with, you know, the Tascam, I think it's Tascam,
certainly, yeah,
ER10Ls, and they're recording, like, an interview. What, I guess this is getting pretty technical, but, like, as far as, like, placement, because I know a lot of people, like, you know, I'm a big proponent. I'm a visual person first. And so I'm like, oh, like, I can see that microphone. And so, like, but then, like, then people try to hide it and then it gets muffled, or you can hear their, like, shirt rustling. So I got, what is a practical way that you could kind of, if, because I know, I think those are more, like, affordable for a lot,
certainly,
of people,
certainly.
Too. Just like a couple $100 instead of, like, a, you know, $400 or $500 shotgun mic, or a, you know,
or more, right?
So, so I guess what is, like, I know a lot of people use those. What is your, I guess, expert opinion, or, you know, advice on how to get the best sound quality from those types of mics? More prosumer,
certainly, yeah,
area,
yeah. I mean, there's definitely disadvantages of something like that, especially when it comes to, like, you're not monitoring it in real time. You don't have a way to listen to what you're hearing, so you're sort of just gambling on it going right, and you won't really know until you get into post and start trying to listen to what's actually been recorded, but with something like that, in an ideal world, you would have the lav exposed, because then you're minimizing potential problems like clothing rustle or things like that, like you mentioned. doesn't mean you can't still be neat about the way it is. Like, I've seen people just clip it on and just have like a wire hanging down that just looks terrible. So at least then like run it through your clothing and like clip it, like say on here, right here would be a great place to go. Generally somewhere right around the solar plexus is going to give you the most transparent sound as far as lav placement goes. But if you don't want to see it and you do want to bury it, making sure it does sound good first is usually a good place to start. Not having excessive amounts of layers on top of it. I would say you're generally going to get less noise if you attach it to the clothing so that you have skin rubbing against it rather than attaching it to the skin so that you have clothing rubbing against it. That's a good place to start with something like that. I mean, I think in the scenario of a one-man band kind of scenario, you may be better off with just a mic on a stand. You're shooting like a talking head kind of scenario. You're not really doing like run and gun doc content. So there's a little bit more control in that manner. And something like a mic on a stand is probably going to give you better results. Yeah. And you can monitor it.
Sure. True. Yeah. I think if you're doing something like that, just like talking head interview type, it is a lot easier to just, you know, you have a camera on sticks, you can monitor the audio pretty well, which kind of leads me into the next question. Do you recommend, I know I'm getting to technical things, but like, do you recommend people going, like, if they're doing like a boom overhead, shotgun style, do you recommend going like direct to camera, audio, or recording your audio separately?
So
in that situation,
I would always recommend recording it separately, but there, in the scenario of someone who is a one-man band videographer, it could be a bit more cumbersome and more to deal with in that scenario. So it really depends on that, but there are disadvantages with using the preamps built into cameras. They're higher noise. They're just not as good of quality of preamps. But inversely, if you do record externally, then you have to start thinking about how you synchronize your external audio and your videos. That becomes more complex in a workflow standpoint too. So even sort of a hybrid of the two might make sense, where you are recording separately, but you're feeding a line level feed out from what you're recording on into the camera so that your camera is also recording a higher quality feed.
Yeah, that is good. That's great advice, because I know that, you know, if you, you know, you can only prevent technology from failing so much, but, you know, if you were to have, it is probably better, you know, to have like two things recording high quality audio than just kind of relying and crossing your fingers that the SD card won't fail or whatever you're recording to.
Oh yeah, I've absolutely had SD card failures. Fortunately, my recorder records multiple cards simultaneously, so that has solved that problem, but that is a scary thing when a card failure happens.
Yes, I was grateful for the day when like they figured that out on cameras of like, can we dual record. It was not even that long ago, really, like dual record video at the same quality on both cards so we don't lose, you know, anything.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially, like, coming from the wedding world, like, it's once it's done type of thing. You can't reshoot it. So, that's great. I mean, I guess more like less away from like the technical side of things. So like for the listeners, what Henry does, you know, is strays very from doing like a one man shoot. What I've seen Henry do and what he does on way bigger productions, you know, it's all like, all you do is monitor the audio and I'm sure it kind of expands. I don't really know, like, as far as what your role is, if you bring people with you, if like, you know, we need to lav 10 people, like, I don't know how that works, if it's just really only you all the time.
Yeah, I would say that changes shoot to shoot, production value, scale of the production, type of content.
Right.
there's definitely content that I can do by myself, but as the scale grows and gets into either faster paced shoots with a decent amount of equipment where I just need another person to help me move quicker, or whether it's something like a narrative where there's an expectation of a higher level of production quality, and in order to get that, you need more people involved in the process. So in that scenario, I will absolutely hire out boom ops, audio utilities, things of that nature, and supply them for the production in addition to myself.
Gotcha. So kind of, if you can like give us just a really short synopsis, I guess, of what, take the project we did together last year, for
certainly.
Example. What are all of the things that you did, you know, as you know, you acted as the boom op, but you also were monitoring, and you know, were mic placing and all of the other things. So I guess kind of, if somebody was like, wow, that sounds interesting, I'm interested in audio recording and those types of things, but I also like filmmaking, like this could be a cool thing. What on something like, it was a pretty small crew of about five people, and you really acted as the audio person solely, so kind of what did that look like from, you know, arriving on
set? Absolutely. I mean, it's all in any sort of crew, it's all a team environment, and each person has their focus. So with being focused solely on audio, my primary goal is to record quality audio, whether that's dialogue or net sound or whatever it ends up being for each scene and each portion of the video. It's all about recording good quality audio. So that starts with mic placement, like we discussed, getting the boom in there. So in that scenario, I'm wearing a bag strapped to me. And then I also had a boom that I was able to extend and get into where it actually needed to be. But I also had a wireless lav. In scenarios like that, because of the pace, you'll typically, even though in, say, a talking head sort of scenario, you're going to have better performance out of a boom. When you start getting into things like wide shots, especially in more of like a scripted commercial and things like that, it's just, you're not going to be able to get the quality you need off of a boom in the distance that it's going to have to be in a wide shot. So that's where starting to mic people up with wireless lavs and record those all and monitor it in real time and make sure everything is sounding the way it needs to sound on set is really important. But it's not just that. We're also creating reference mixes of what is sounding the best at any given time and feeding that to cameras so that when you start editing it, it's all, you already have reference audio. You can start pulling it all together. And since you're recording audio separately as well as camera separately, you start having to think about how are those two going to come together in post. And it typically falls on the sound department to handle synchronization on set. So in larger productions, typically time code is how you handle that. So the recorder is usually the master clock for that, and then is pushing time code out to all the other devices on set, other cameras, if you have more than one audio recorder, so forth and so on. It is handling a common time code so that everything can be synced using just metadata. Another thing that can be important in a scenario like that is the ability for a client to hear what's actually happening so that they can know what takes are good and what takes are not. And especially when you start getting a little bit of a distance between you and talent or somewhere like outdoor in an outdoor space, it can be really challenging to hear a performance. So having headsets so that clients and directors and producers can hear what's actually happening and have a confidence feed of the audio is super useful.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember on that specific job, we had, you know, we had Video Village to a certain extent. And we could see everything. And I asked the director, I was like, can you hear? And he's like, oh, it's fine. And I was like, you had asked me like, you know, do you guys want a monitor feed? And I was like, I mean, that's an option. That'd be awesome. And that's just like those, like, you know, having those things in your bag, literally your arsenal of, like, you know, I have this, you know, this capability, and just taking that production level to the next level of, like, oh yeah, now the direct, we were certainly outside, it was kind of loud, there was street noise a little bit, and just, you know, it just made things way easier for him to be like, oh yeah, that was a good take, that was funny, because it was
right absolutely ad.
So, you know, that made me laugh. I could actually hear it, so, you know, it's just for sure, like, just having all of those different aspects. So there's a lot of things to be thinking about, even just within,
right, because it's not just the recording of the sound, it's support for production, it's support for a camera, it's all these things that make working in a team environment feasible.
Right. And I'm curious, like, how did you, I mean, obviously you said your kind of first introduction to this world was, you know, a feature. So you saw pretty much all of those aspects in play. But I guess kind of how did you pick up and, like, realize, like, oh, that's, you know, I'm aware, you know, like time code and slating, that, you know, you don't really start.
Yep. Yep. There?
Oh, your video.
Oh, that's weird.
So I was just making sure. But where was I at?
You were talking about features and production value at that level, and
oh, just like how you kind of grew in those, like, oh, I, you know, this, you know, this is something that we need, that I need to have in my, you know, in my services, I guess, and be able to, you know, offer on
certainly
on set. I guess, yeah, that's kind of a weird.
I think I get where you're going with it, though. Yeah. I mean, I think within, so I already had an audio background prior to ever getting into production sound. So, like, the aspects of how to record good quality audio, mic placement, how to do proper gain staging, so when you're connecting multiple devices together, they're all coming in at proper calibrated levels with one another. That stuff, I already had that background. So for me, there was nuances to production sound that were different from the studio world that I had to learn, like lav placement. That's genuinely probably one of the most difficult things within production sound is lav placement, because being able to get a clear, transparent sound without any sort of noise introduced by the wardrobe, across such a variety of different wardrobes, is generally one of the most challenging parts in any sort of production. And then I also had to learn things about timecode and sync and just nuances of working in a crew, because that's a very different type of environment than working as an engineer in a studio. It's, in an engineer as a studio, you're generally the person doing the work, and there really isn't anyone else aside from who's recording. Whereas right. In the production world, you're working in a team environment where, like, 3 or 4 people is usually the smallest crew I'll ever end up on, but 10 right. seems to kind of be around the average kind of crew size.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think, because if you come from audio, you're the engineer, but you're also acting as the producer.
Certainly.
So yeah, you're kind of just kind of like the end all be all. But then if you're on a set, and there's so much, you know, I always laugh, you know, after I started kind of working in that environment, like with Ray and Aaron, of like all of the different terminology, I'm like, man, this world is so bizarre. Even it's in the same realm of what I do, but even just like in when you're stepping up production, just like the terminology.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'm just like, you just have to learn the vernacular.
Yeah, there's terminology. Yeah. There's, like, set etiquette in terms of, like, what is and isn't. In that kind of environment.
Yeah, for sure. I guess, what would you say? how would you encourage them to kind of get started?
Yeah.
Or start exploring?
I mean, I think for a large percentage of people, there is no substitute for just getting your hands on something and doing something. And obviously you don't want to take on some sort of large production that's beyond your abilities and equipment and things of that nature, to where you're going to end up burning bridges and delivering bad quality work. So starting in low risk productions where the stakes are not super high, allowing yourself to make mistakes and learn from those is a great place to start in terms of the technical knowledge. And then I think even just getting your feet wet on set, a great way to do that is to work as a production assistant, because you're in a non-critical role where you're helping make this content possible, but you're getting a feel for what working in a crew is like. You're getting a feel for what the different roles on set are. And then that's a great way just to get your feet wet even before you decide in what kind of specialty you want to pursue, whether that's becoming a director of photography, working as a producer, working as a director, working as a production sound mixer, working as a gaffer, any of those sorts of things. It gives you a little bit of a feel for what those are like before you ever actually get into a larger production as a department head.
Yeah. I would totally agree with that. I guess kind of like reading some of your or like, I don't know.
I think a little bit of both. I think in terms of getting work, if you do good work and you're a nice person, that's a huge factor to begin with. But then beyond that, just being as visible as possible for what you do, whether that's online or with other people who work in production, you build up a network of people who know what you do for. Google search or a Facebook group or whatever that ends up being. If someone's looking, you want to be the person they find.
Right. Yeah. And I, you know, sharing your expertise and sharing your knowledge is, you know, obviously super valuable. I guess, I don't even know the answer to this. Do you like offer like personal coaching, or like how could people like find out like or learn more from you if like they're like, do you offer like personal coaching or anything like that, or just kind of like
I don't really necessarily offer like coaching or anything like that. I would say like if you want to have a conversation, just reach out and I'm always happy to talk shop.
Right. Sure. Yeah. How do you recommend like people like on larger productions, how would people even kind of explore the idea of being like a PA or even like shadowing? I don't even know if that like setiquette allows for like, I mean, as long as they're like not asking him.
Certainly. I think COVID has somewhat changed the ability to shadow on set and things of that nature, especially for some larger productions still requiring like testing and masking and all that for across the board for while you're on set. I would say that even just getting started as a PA, like reaching out to established freelancers in the market, because a lot of times a producer will need recommendations for someone in another position from the local crew they're hiring. And PAs are almost exclusively hired local. So reaching out to other people in your market and just letting them know that you're interested and available, and just making it known that that's something you want to do is a great way to just get started.
Awesome. That's great. I guess for you, like, I guess this is January 2023. What are you excited about for this year? What's this year look like for you, and what are you excited about?
I have absolutely no idea what this year is going to look like so far. I have no work on the books currently.
Okay.
But January, February is traditionally always the slowest time of the year for me. I think given there's usually a push for content at the end of December, get us that spending in before the end of the tax year. And then it kind of drops off Christmas into New Year's, and then typically stays pretty slow January and February. So
yeah,
I'm sure I'll get calls, and it's amazing how last minute the production industry can be, even on large scale productions where like you're getting a call like 3 days before a large scale commercial with celebrity talent in it. Yeah.
It's because, yeah, clients are always, you know, it's like, you know, the production, it's just always like, no matter how many like ducks in a row that you think you have, it's like, we're not making decisions.
Oh, absolutely.
Last minute, and then it's like, oh, well, I guess we're this and this and this. I hope there's people available. But yeah, no, yeah. And then like after February, like you said, like it usually people are like, oh, we should do video content, or, you know, we should produce content for this year, you know, kind of after
people
get through tax.
Yeah, it's nice to have a little bit of downtime at the beginning of the season just to do things like go over the maintenance of your equipment, to take care of taxes for the year, to just handle basic business stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, all of those things that many of us don't particularly enjoy. Myself very much
taxes
myself.
Are probably about as painful as it gets.
Yes, I would agree with that. That's why I highly recommend.
Yes. I will hand them the reports, and they can take care of the rest.
Yeah, yes, for sure. I guess you probably learned, as we all did in 2020, like you can have whatever kind of, you know, thoughts, and you know, like, yeah, this is what 2023 is going to look like, but the reality is like we don't have any idea, because anything
absolutely
can happen, really. So it's just like, you know, one day, one week, one month at a time. But this is the best, I think one of the best times to be in this industry. It's just a lot of fun, and I'm learning and growing from people like you and Ray, and just like how we can take things to the next level. How I, you know, like, oh, we can, you know, you can hire specialists, you can hire anybody to do anything, and it makes it heightens everything and brings like everything to a new level. I don't
know if I had any other questions. I'm just kind of like looking through. Is there anything like that you wanted to really talk about, or anything that, any thoughts that
in your head? Not specifically off the top of my head. I guess when you were talking about 2020, one thing popped into my head that I would say is an advantage of having your own business or being a freelancer comparatively to your typical 9-to-5 is if something changes and you have a single employer, you just lost your income. Different people you kind of have a safety in that diversification of client base.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, you even mentioned like earlier in the conversation how you almost interviewed people get this, or you did interview and it didn't work out, and you're glad it didn't because that company doesn't exist anymore. Because people get in their mind like if you have a traditional 9-to-5, then you're safe. But I think it's kind of more opposite of like you don't have any control over. You know, there's big companies right now in the last week or so. You know, I think like Vimeo or like big companies.
Oh, absolutely.
Layoffs. Now, you know, it's just kind of been that thing for the past couple months with just kind of the economy fluctuating and inflation,
I think,
and stuff.
So I noticed personally, and in kind of it seems to be the general trend amongst other people, their freelancers and producers, and it seems like 2022 is slower, not a bad year by any means, but like slower than 2021 in comparison. And it seems that there's just kind of a lot of companies that are very apprehensive about spending with the uncertainty of the economy. But I think that apprehensiveness will then kind of resolve itself and eventually lead to a rush of spending as well.
Right. Yeah. That's what we're hoping for. No, yeah, I would agree with that. It's just like, yeah, it's just been kind of a weird years or so. Of like, we're cutting everything off. We're not spending any money.
Well, now we're in trouble financially because we weren't spending any money on marketing.
Right. Yeah. Like, so people were kind of realizing. And then 2021 was like, but yeah, I mean, I've noticed, like, I'm not in the wedding world anymore, but I have a lot of friends that still are. And I've even noticed, like, people are apprehensive about, like, the people booking, like,
certainly,
especially videographers. Are more apprehensive about spending the money on that. You know, the 2010s into like 2020 were like the magical years of being a wedding videographer. And then, you know, because that's really when like
certainly
our mirrorless, you know, wave hit, and you could shoot cinematic wedding videos for relatively, you know, buy equipment relatively affordable. Yeah.
I think that whole thing of, and not even just the wedding world, but like, I think the cost coming down on cameras and the quality going up on cheaper cameras has really opened up a segment of market that didn't really exist previously, where there was either high end or mid tier. And then there wasn't really as much of the low end. And that sort of just like opened up an entirely larger market that there's now being more and more content being produced, and as brands become more serious and bigger, those companies will want higher and higher production value, so it's just going to continue to grow as an industry.
Right Yeah, it has kind of broadened out as far as you know people wanting it. We've seen it in like the photography world, and I go back to the wedding, you know, everybody's a photographer. Everybody, you know, if you buy a mirrorless camera or whatever, you know, you can, anybody can shoot anything, you know, you have auto mode, even now, like with audio stuff, there's like float audio, and like you can really fake almost like you can get by enough almost like, or even those like Tascam things, they record at like 0 dB and -12. So you
like at a dual gain staged. Yeah.
Yeah. You like almost eliminate like peaking to a certain degree. So it's kind of like almost idiot. Like they're almost idiot proofing like all the gear. And so I'm not trying to.
No, I think
it's just like, there's like an influx of like, oh, I can.
Right. You know, and I don't think that's really going to like dramatically change things in the higher levels of production value, but what that does really open up is higher production value for people like content creators who are creating YouTube channels and things like that. So like the baseline of what is the level of quality for the most entry level production has gone up. higher budget content, and as such, people like you and I stay employed.
Right. Yeah. No, yeah, I think I'm really excited for the potential of 2023, and just kind of beyond. We might not have like a celebrity, like actor that we can, you know,
yeah,
money yeah. buy anything, but like just even proving to people like the quality of production can be up to
certainly, certainly
those types of things, and the audio, obviously audio, and just, yeah, you know, having a legitimate DP and all of those different things that are lighting, like. Lighting and audio.
Oh, absolutely.
Are, you know, the biggest keys into production level for sure.
I have a lot of respect for gaffers and what they do and what all goes into it.
Yeah. It's crazy. But yeah, I guess, yeah, I have any other thoughts or
not off the top of my head.
Okay. I guess where can people find you if they want to check out your work or the things that you've worked on, or read some
easiest studies. Way to either get a hold of me or just learn more information is my website, which is henryrap.com. Straight to that URL.
Okay. Awesome. Any last parting words that you want to give people that might be interested in either filmmaking or
yeah, I mean, if you have interest in audio or and just want to talk shop, or if you are a filmmaker and you need audio for your project, feel free to reach out and just start a conversation.
Yeah, and I'll personally testify that he's the best and very professional on set and just...
I appreciate the kind words.
Great stuff. Great stuff. Very impressed with your work and, you know, hoping, you know, 2023 will bring
yeah, us absolutely.
Together more and we can yeah. do some more work together. And
it was a pleasure working with you last year and hope to do so again.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
It's always super exciting and interesting to have guests on the show, especially specialists who are very specialized in their craft and their and what they do. And it was definitely a pleasure talking to Henry, and you should definitely check him out. And if you are scaling your production sizes and are looking for an audio guy, look no further, especially if you're in the Ohio area. Or beyond, but he's very good, and definitely check him out. As always, you can check out all of the other episodes, vidbizpodcast.com, and until next week, peace. Switch it up.